Good morning, friends. Welcome back to Sniffy's Podcast, your bi-weekly dose of positivity. I'm your host, Howard.
Hello, everybody. I'm Ping, co-hosting this podcast with Howard.
Last week, we talked about a lot of things that dogs don't like in general. Today, we're going to continue this topic with Greg. And we also got a question from our audience asking, is there any food that dogs don't like in general? Greg, do you know the answer?
Yeah, that's another great question. So, similar to how I mentioned, like, dogs' noses are many, many times more sensitive than our own, sort of the reverse with taste. Humans, on average, have about 10,000 taste buds, whereas dogs have a little over 1,500 taste buds, I believe. They're not as concerned about taste as we are. It's not as much an issue for them, again, because they can eat and process and digest a lot of stuff that humans can't, and whatever they don't digest will usually just pass through very easily, oftentimes. So, and again, as omnivores, scavengers, they'll eat basically anything they can find. So their tongues don't need to be as fine-tuned as people's, and they can just kind of eat whatever. They generally seem to have a preference for high-protein, high-calorie things, you know, like meat and cheese, I'm sure our dogs would love. And generally, in my experience, it seems that they're not as driven by lower-calorie things, vegetables, things like that. So generally dogs don't discriminate, and they'll just kind of take whatever.
How do they know, like, this food is, like, low calorie or high calorie? Is this by smell or?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know specifically, but I would imagine just, again, you know, those high power smell receptors aren't just for fun. They serve a function. So I'm sure they're able to smell and process and understand what their body needs and wants. And like a lot of things, like Ting mentioned earlier, when dogs eat poop, that seems disgusting to us because deep in our genetics, we know it would be harmful to us.
Right.
So our bodies and brains and genetics have tuned us to know that we don't like that smell because it's not good for us.
Mm-hmm.
So dogs with their super noses can probably sense this smells really good, so it's probably really good for me. So it's just sort of how they've shaped and evolved to learn what their bodies need and can handle.
I see. So I guess probably they're okay with eating the same food like every day, right? They don't get bored.
Right. Like I mentioned, they're not as interested in, or the taste isn't as important to them, and as they're happy to get a free meal every day.
I see.
Yeah, you know, Chubby was on diet for a short period as suggested by his vet. And during that time, I kept giving him same food every day. I mean, low-calorie food. So I was thinking maybe he would feel bored eating same food every day. But from what you just mentioned, now I know it should be fine to him.
Yeah.
So far, we've been talking a lot on what dogs don't like in general. And most of them can be avoided, like food or smell. But sometimes it's just impossible to avoid things like taking shower. So I guess it's also very important to learn how to help them be used to those things. Greg, from a trainer's perspective, is this something trainable or it's not trainable?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a really common theme in a lot of dogs. You know, everyone's got something they don't like. The cool thing is that broadly speaking, no matter what the situation is, you can use sort of the same formula to help your dog. I'll start with an example of handling your dog. if they don't like being touched on a certain part of their body or pet a certain way. So let's say your dog goes to the groomer to get their nails trimmed and one nail gets clipped too short and it hurts pretty bad. So now the next time the dog goes to the groomer, they're not going to let them near that paw because last time it hurt pretty bad. They want to avoid that again.
Right.
That can spread even further, even outside of the groomer. Your dog might just not let anyone touch their paws at all for any reason. So the way to work on that is to give them a really positive, happy experience where they're comfortable being handled, and then gradually inch towards the part that's more sensitive. So that might be just petting your dog on their back or maybe sort of upper leg. And you can look at their body language. Again, so as long as they seem relaxed, they're not tensing up, they're not trying to pull away, they're relaxed and you can pet them there. Do that while feeding them some really good treats. You know, big spoonful of peanut butter as you're handling them there. Then that'll be it for the first session. And then the next time you can pet them a little bit lower on their leg while feeding them some really good stuff. And again, the order is important. We don't want to trick them, say, if you come get this peanut butter, I'm going to grab your foot.
Right.
We want them to know the good thing comes next. And then just gradually sort of move towards the sensitive area. Again, it's got to be actively positive, but eventually you'll be able to get closer and lightly touch the paws. Then you can pick it up and work back up to clipping their nails without your dog getting stressed out.
So it's like taking baby steps. You take one step and see your dog's reaction. If your dog is good with it, it's comfortable, then you move on. Take another step further.
And you can apply the same sort of idea to basically anything that your dog is sensitive to. The key is just staying where they're comfortable and then gradually inching towards it. If your dog is scared of fireworks, we can use that example even. You can get a video of fireworks playing on 10% volume and feed your dog some really good stuff. And then gradually increase the volume as they get more and more comfortable. And then that will sort of desensitize them to the scary thing that they don't like. And then that should help them get more comfortable with the idea of whatever might be scaring them.
Oh, wow. That's good to know. So now I'm wondering if we can also apply this method to cats. For example, I know some owners, at least me, I want to walk my cats. But every time when I bring them out, it's like killing them. So I feel that if we can apply this method or strategy or skills, probably in the future I can walk my cats.
Absolutely. The cool thing about this method, like I said, is that it can pretty much apply to any uncomfortable situation. Even humans, you can do the same thing, you know, with yourself or someone else, staying where you're comfortable, making it happy, fun, positive, and then next time you try pushing yourself a little bit further. But absolutely with cats, going on walks, wearing the harness and leash can be a big adjustment for cats. So, you know, you might start with just loosely draping it over your cat and feed him some good stuff, some canned wet food or tuna. And then next time you buckle it on loosely and so on.
What if my dog or cat doesn't like food?
That's a very good question. Food is a primary reinforcer for animals. It is intrinsically good. It is always good. Even if your dog or cat or any animal doesn't seem particularly motivated, it is still having a good biological feedback in their body because every living thing knows it has to eat to live. What I usually recommend to people if their pet isn't particularly food motivated is you can use their meals as the reward for this training. In fact, sometimes that's a good idea regardless, because it sort of puts you in a good routine. You know, we know when you get your breakfast, that's when we're going to practice putting on your harness.
Gotcha. Greg, I'm wondering, have you ever heard about a feedback from owners saying that, oh, I don't want to train my dogs with treats or food because they might be eating too much? So as a trainer, what's your opinion on this?
Yeah, it's a valid question. That is common concern with positive reinforcement training.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one route you could take. Like I mentioned, using meal time as training time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great way to do it. Additionally, you really don't need that many treats or that much to get a good feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have a small piece of hard candy or a big ice cream sundae, they're both still pretty tasty. They both taste good and make you feel good. So they can be the same with training. You can use pretty small treats to reward your dog. Typically, you don't need long training sessions or a whole lot of treats. You can make a lot of progress with tiny pea-sized treats every other day. If that was all you used for your training, you could still make a lot of progress, depending on your goals.
That's a good idea. So we split the treat into small pieces so we can use them for training sessions. That's a good idea. Thank you, Greg.
So Greg, you mentioned earlier that when pets are feeling cold, usually they would stay close to their people, like cuddle with them just to stay warm. And you know, in winter, we often see dogs wear clothes and shoes when they're outside. So do you think they really enjoy having those put on them? Or it's just from humans' perspective, they think dogs would need that?
It's probably some of both.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of dog clothes is so that humans can have fun playing dress up with their dogs. And, you know, if the dog's fine with it, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But it might feel unnatural for dogs. In a lot of cases, so you could use the method we talked about earlier to get them comfortable, sensitized to, or desensitized to wearing the clothes. But there are definitely cases where it can be good for the dogs as well. It's probably something that the dogs don't consciously know is good for them, but it's sort of something that we are doing to help take care of our dogs. Certainly, depending on where you live, if winter is pretty cold,
right,
and you've got maybe a small dog or a short-haired dog who gets cold really easily, then wearing a sweater, absolutely. Or if you're bringing your dog out on the lake, you've got them in a boat, a life jacket certainly could help dogs.
Yeah.
You know, they can do the doggy paddle, but a life jacket's a good option as well. And as far as the shoes, those can certainly be good for a dog long term as well. It does feel weird for a lot of dogs at first. They don't really, they're used to feeling their paws on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So when they can't feel that and it feels like their feet are sort of always touching the ground, they might not know what to think at first. So again, that's a good time to use that exercise and get them gradually accustomed to it. Dog paws can definitely be sensitive to walking on different rough surfaces, hot surfaces, if you're in a really sunny area, or if you're in a place where they use salt to melt ice on the roads, that can irritate a dog's paws. So certainly, for the most part, dogs can handle themselves pretty well, but there are times where accessories like that can come in handy.
That is true, especially for dogs living in cities like Toronto, Rochester. During the winter, it's super cold. Okay, now I want to bring up another topic. It's about resource guarding. You know, my parents' dog is very aggressive if you try to approach him while he's eating. So I'm curious, like, why do dogs show this kind of behavior, like resource guarding? Greg, do you know why?
It certainly can depend on a lot of different factors. I believe it's more common in dogs who grew up stray, didn't grow up around people, and probably had to spend more of their time and energy looking for food. So it's largely a survival instinct or a stress response. They have a resource and they want to hold on to it. Mm-hmm. They are doing it to protect themselves and keep themselves healthy and fed. So it oftentimes comes from that survival instinct. Could be from stress or anxiety of potentially losing that food. All dogs have the capacity to guard their resources, but it certainly can be more common depending on their background. And sometimes it does happen for no apparent reason that we can tell. So it is natural. It is relatively common. It's nothing. There's nothing inherently bad about it. We can't blame our dogs for wanting to make sure they get fed.
Right.
Yeah.
So if our dogs are showing this behavior, I mean, resource guarding, is there a way that we can help them?
Absolutely. It depends on what they're guarding. I think that would be the first step, is sort of figure out what are they guarding.
Mm-hmm.
Resource guarding is a pretty broad term. Sometimes it's guarding food. Sometimes it's guarding their toys. Sometimes it's guarding other people. So I think the first step would be identifying what are they guarding. And oftentimes you can usually work around it through just managing the environment. So that's usually my first line of defense.
Mm-hmm.
If your dog, especially with multiple dog households, if your dog's getting fights over their food, feeding them separately, if that solves the issue, then that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But in other circumstances, generally speaking, to circle back to a couple other lessons,
mm-hmm.
we want the dogs to think what happens next, and we want to stay where our dogs are more comfortable. So if your dog is eating from a dish and they growl when somebody tries to take the dish away, mm-hmm. then what we can do is approach the dog, but stop before we would make them upset, and then throw some really tasty, good, meaty food that our dog really loves.
Mm-hmm.
Throw that towards them or in the bowl if we can. We want them to think, again, the order of the events happening.
Mm-hmm.
Person coming towards me while I'm eating doesn't mean my food is going to get taken away.
Mm-hmm.
Person coming towards me while I'm eating means more good food is coming, and they'll feel better about that. So that's one angle you can take to help your dog get more comfortable with resource guarding. And it varies a lot from situation to situation, of course. So having a trained professional who has experience in the room with you is definitely the way to go. Or at least somebody who can guide you, see to help for aggressive behaviors, at least. That's something that I would always recommend as your first bet, is if you can have somebody to help with your specific case when it comes to aggression, because it can be so specific. There might be signs that you're missing if you don't have experience with it. Certainly the examples I've given so far are just that. They're just examples, mm-hmm. and to be sort of informative on the behavior process.
Right.
Not so much lessons and actions that you should just take and hope it'll all work out. They're, like I said, just sort of examples of how a behavior training plan could go. Yes, that is certainly something you want to look out for. Is a good trainer will know what lines they shouldn't cross.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
if you're trying to tell someone that you can solve this problem over the phone, that might not necessarily be the case. Mm-hmm. If you have someone who says, gee, that sounds tough, I'd like to meet you in person, or if you could at least send me a video, and then I'll give you some more specific feedback. That's something that would be a signal that the trainer knows what they can and can't do, because you're absolutely right. It could be dangerous to go jump in the deep end and do something you're really not prepared for.
I see. Thanks for the information.
Yeah, of course.
Greg, do you think that dogs would have preference for certain kinds of people and would dislike someone for some reasons? Maybe it's because of the characteristics of the person, the smell of them, or the clothes they are wearing.
So a lot of times dogs, if they don't like somebody, it could be based on prior experience, and they might generalize that. Maybe they knew someone who had a really big beard and they yelled at the dog. So now anyone who's got a big beard, the dog thinks, maybe people with beards yell at me, so I don't like it.
Okay.
So that a lot of times it could be from prior experience. Sometimes it could be for reasons that we can't fully understand. But dogs certainly do sometimes seem to us at least, seem to have a preference for some people over others. A lot of it could be how the person's body language, if they make a lot of direct eye contact or tower over the dog, that could be perceived as threatening or uncomfortable. So it might be things that we don't even know we're doing consciously that might be frightening or confrontational to a dog. So certainly there are cases where some people, by no fault of their own, just approach dogs in a way they don't find comfortable. And the opposite is true also. If someone has maybe a softer voice, or they like crouch down lower when they're meeting a dog, just sort of how they present themselves, that could certainly also have an effect on what a dog thinks of somebody.
Gotcha.
Today, we talk about how to help our dogs get used to things that they don't like, with a method called desensitization, and also how to help our dog with resource guarding. You need to find a private trainer. I hope everyone enjoys this episode, and thanks again for being here, Greg.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
We will put the information of Greg's class below. You will definitely love his class. See you next time. Thanks for tuning in today's episode. Your thoughts and feedback are very important to us, so please don't hesitate to reach out. Whether it's a story you'd like to share, a topic you're curious about, or you're interested in joining us as a guest speaker, please email to info@sniffylabs.com. See you next time.